Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
When somebody is openly angry with you, you might try to apologize, you might feel threatened, or you might just feel angry in return. It's unpleasant to be sure, but at least you can talk openly about the source of the conflict. But what are we supposed to do when somebody is indirectly hostile, dropping subtle insults here and there, deliberately shirking responsibility by claiming to have forgotten or made an innocent mistake, or just freezing us out of conversation and then saying we're being too sensitive and bringing it up? If any of this sounds familiar to you, you have felt the sting of a passive-aggressive attack. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. The tricky thing about passive-aggressive displays of anger is that they are disguised. For whatever reason, somebody wants to make you feel bad but doesn't want to acknowledge being angry. And that silent conflict can be toxic if it's not resolved. Joining us to talk about this is psychologist Tim Murphy, who, as it happens, is also a member of Congress representing his hometown of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. His book, written and recently updated with therapist Lorianne Oberlin, is called Overcoming Passive Aggression: How to Stop Hidden Anger from Spoiling Your Relationships, Career, and Happiness. Congressman Murphy, welcome to Think.
It's great to be with you. Thank you.
Is the layperson's understanding of passive-aggressive behavior any different from the clinical definition?
No, and I think you grabbed it right. It is the way that sometimes people avoid direct conflict, and so they will play passive-aggressive games. It is sometimes a conscious effort to make someone's life miserable but not have to take responsibility for it, or maybe they don't know that you're the one doing it. Sometimes it is a simmering, seething way of just continuing to needle away at someone bit by bit. But that's it. So whether it's a person who it's their way of life or it is the way they handle some conflicts, it's a pretty brutal way of handling things.
Do we all do this sometimes?
I think we do. Whether it's maybe you, quote unquote, forget to leave a tip for a waiter or waitress because you're grumpy that day or maybe didn't like something they're doing, or maybe sometimes someone will not do the thing at work they should be doing, not passing the information on time, to levels that get pretty high level. I mean, I've heard of people who assistant for someone who purposely booked their flight in the last seat in the between in the plane near the restroom just to stick it to them and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, it was the only one left over and a full flight." So it can go lots of different ways, but everybody does it. The question is, if you maintain it, if you catch up on it, if you try not to do it and you make a difference in your life, or if you just continue it on, is that the difference between being someone that's not very pleasant to be around versus someone who's just human?
What are some of the typical risk factors for people who have trouble expressing anger openly? Is there like a family of origin story unique or common, to people who are passive aggressive?
Well, there are things that happen in terms of, it's a learned behavior, how not to be direct in handling conflict, large or small. And some families, and you see it again when you get together at holiday time, you have those annual family reunions and reopen the old wounds that have been there on an annual basis for 10, 20 years, that you see some families just don't want to talk directly about things. They'll talk around them. They'll put little digs, a little bit of sarcasm, a little bit of avoidance or lots of that, because they're just not used to that. And it can feel extremely uncomfortable for someone if they're not used to having an open, honest conversation. Something as simple as, "Hey, look, would you mind not doing that anymore? Would you please try a different way?" Or just even expressing your own reaction to someone is tough for some people. That's the way that they see it in their family.
Of course, in some cases, you say to somebody, "Hey, cut that out. You're actually really bothering me." And then they will say, they'll deny that they were doing it on purpose, right? "Oh, I'm so sorry that that upsets you."
Well, you just hit on something very important. It's sort of the pseudo-apology. You notice what you said. It wasn't,
right,
"I'm sorry I did that." It was, "I'm sorry that you got upset by that."
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you an opportunity to say, "No, we're not talking about my feeling upset. I'll take responsibility for that. My concern is what you did, and I'd appreciate if you not do that." So it could be, what if someone at holiday time gets your child a present, and it's the wrong size, the wrong color, the wrong object? It's bought for a boy when it's really a girl. Someone should know better. And sometimes if you know it's the needling relative all along, you just say, "I'm just going to let this go. I'll just take it back and return it." But sometimes it is best to say, "Look, this has been going on for a long time. Can we just bury this hatchet? Can we just settle this?" And you're right. Someone will avoid it because a passive-aggressive person doesn't want to talk directly about things. So there's a nuanced way you have to do this.
Are passive-aggressive people always aware that their behavior is, in fact, driven by anger?
A great question. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes passive aggression is intentional. They're doing it for the purpose of getting back at someone or just making their life miserable. It could be someone who is in the midst of a divorce or breaking up a relationship or just a miserable workplace, and they're just doing it a constant string of things that they can say, hey, I didn't do this. It's not my fault. And other times, we're just not aware. It's just a bad habit, a bad way of handling conflict that we're not aware of.
Congressman Murphy, why are some people more prone to angry feelings than others? You know what I mean? Like, you'll meet people and they just seem to have a quicker trigger. It doesn't mean they're bad people, but they're inclined to anger more than others.
Multiple things. There are some biological differences between people that some people just have that short fuse, that the way they process information or their emotions are pretty raw there. You have someone who's been through some pretty traumatic experiences, and that can occur. I mean, some of my work I do, I'm also in the Navy. I'm a psychologist in the Navy. I work at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center, Bethesda, with people with post-traumatic stress disorder. And one of the aspects of that sometimes is this rawness with anger, this flash temper, this quick to anger, the sarcasm, the needling. Sometimes that's there to put off relationships and put off closeness. Sometimes it is lashing out, and that could be a way. So there's multiple ways this can come through.
I wonder if there are certain situations where people resort to being passive-aggressive because they feel like it's inappropriate to be angry with a person. Like if someone has been ill, maybe you've been taking care of them and they've really been a challenge, and you know that it's not really fair to be upset at somebody because they've had the flu for a week, you know, that sort of thing.
Wonderful question. Yeah, so we say, this person's sick, I'm not going to really stick it to them, but... But then if you're not aware of your own emotions, if you haven't practiced that, it can still come out. And the idea that, well, I'm not responsible because I didn't really do this directly doesn't fly. One of the things that's important in a situation like that, you have to start off by acknowledging your own emotions. I mean, anger is a resulting emotion of lots of other hurt or other emotions. It doesn't occur by itself. There's some other trigger emotion that occurs too. There tends to be a buildup towards it. It can be short-term, it can be long-term. It can be multiple events over a long period of time. It could be a few short things, but those occur there. Then it goes into some spark, sets it off at that moment. So let's say your example of someone who was sick, and you say, well, I don't want to upset this person because they're sick, they're ill, but I'm just really annoyed with their life. I've got to take off work. I've got to do these things. Well, what you got to practice ahead of time, if you're aware of that, aware of your own emotions, is some sense of mindfulness. Go into the situation practicing this may be difficult. Something may occur. And instead of rehearsing the negative or allowing the negative to spontaneously come out, you've actually practiced the positive. I'll give you an example I use with people. So if you were to recite in your own head as fast as possible the alphabet forwards, most people could do that in about 4 or 5 seconds. We've all done it hundreds of thousands of times. And we're used to it, and it's automatic. If I give you the task of saying the alphabet in your head backwards, starting from Z, it's a lot tougher. And many people, by the time they get to X or whatever, they kind of get confused because we haven't practiced it. Well, mindfulness works in a similar way. Instead of always constantly playing the tape over and over in your head, practicing the bad response, the miserable response, or the response of, boy, next time I see that person, I'm going to really get them, or this person's such a pain in my neck. You thought stop it, and you say, I'm going to rehearse a more positive response, to be patient, to be accepting, to understand that that person who is sick, they're not responsible for a thing there. And instead, practice your own patience. It can be marvelously relieving for you and, quite frankly, for the other person, because then you don't have one more toxic event to deal with.
Are there, on the other hand, certain kinds of responses by people who are not passive-aggressive that tend to trigger passive-aggressive behavior? Is it ever the fault of someone other than the passive-aggressive person?
Explain that a little bit more. What do you mean?
In other words, are there things that I might do that would cause someone in my life to respond in passive-aggressive ways to me rather than just saying, Chris, you have really irritated me?
Well, sure. It could come up that way if they get a sense that you can't handle conflict, or they're saying, oh, gosh, I don't want to say anything to her because she's just going to snap at me. It's going to be misery for hours or days. I'm just going to bypass it. So that's where you can take responsibility for your own behavioral response if it is one that constantly sends the message that you can't handle a direct conversation along those lines.
So as you mentioned, people are heading into lots of holiday gatherings, and these can be great. And sometimes we talk about them as if it's all misery and like, why do we bother getting together? Usually it's terrific. But there are old conflicts, maybe things we haven't thought to argue about for a year or more since last we've seen people. If we know that in the past there have been sore moments at holiday get-togethers, how can we practice skills to sort of just deal with somebody, just to sort of get through that one day or that one dinner?
Well, what you can do, first of all, in your own head, is start to rehearse and anticipate that if something comes up, rehearse different responses, defusing responses. So if the other person comes in, as maybe they have in year after year, being sarcastic and meddling, instead of practicing the response like, I'm going to get back at that person, or I'm going to be annoyed when I see her or him, say, practice, you know, I'm just going to relax. I'm going to change the subject. I'm going to do something more positive. We're going to stay away from those toxic three, religion, politics, and whatever else at the dinner table. This is not the year for that. Or another thing a person could do ahead of time, sort of check through your own social media. Have you been positive or negative or sarcastic in your own comments over the last year? If a family member has posted things about them, their vacations, their kids, their family, whatever, have you put a little like in it? Have you put a little positive comment in there? Hey, pretty cool. Nice thing. Congrats to your son for winning this championship or something. Any of those things can start to set the tone. And it's not too late to start that now. On the other hand, if you put snarky comments in or absent comments, you've got some making up to do. And don't be afraid before you do meet for a holiday of sending a helpful email or a quick note or a text or, hey, looking forward to seeing you. It's been a long time. And put a little positive story in there of something good that's happened. You know, I was thinking as we're going to the holidays, I remember the time that we set. So my point is reset the tone to something positive rather than rehearse in your mind the negative.
Am I correct in assuming that that second or, God forbid, third glass of eggnog is probably not a good idea if we expect that there might be some tension?
Yeah, you're going to quickly disintegrate into a Chevy Chase movie, Christmas Vacation, and it may not be pretty. It's a good idea if you've got a lot of simmering anger. You know, alcohol is going to be a catalyst for things that you don't want to be doing. So I would say that eggnog may not be worth it if you end up with a big conflict.
So you mentioned, you know, it's not a great idea to talk about religion or politics. You are a U.S. congressman. This is a sincere question. How do members of Congress deal with angry emotions when the cameras aren't on, when you're not sort of performing your political self for the rest of the world?
Well, let me say something that lets you in on a little secret just between us. Most members of Congress like each other, and we actually get along well together. But there are times in front of the cameras in debate, we recognize it's a debate, and debate can get heated on issues. And actually, no matter how that issue is, people can afterwards say, hey, that was a good debate. Got your point there. It's when it gets personal that it gets to be a problem. And I've seen that one-on-one in someone's office or somewhere else, and I think it's okay if you're behind closed doors. You got to argue it out, so you have to argue it out. And let's face it, elected officials are pretty competitive, and they're pretty good at using words for that stuff, too. So it's a matter of you do those behind closed doors. But at other times, people can sit and resolve and work things out together. People may be surprised to see that because that, quite frankly, doesn't make the evening news.
My guest is U.S. Congressman Tim Murphy, who is a psychologist from Pittsburgh and co-author of Overcoming Passive Aggression, How to Stop Hidden Anger from Spoiling Your Relationships, Career, and Happiness. If you've got a question, now's the time to join the show. 1-800-933-5372 is the email. You can email is the phone number. You can email us at think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Fall registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with U.S. Congressman Tim Murphy, who is also a psychologist from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's co-author of a book called Overcoming Passive Aggression, How to Stop Hidden Anger from Spoiling Your Relationships, Career, and Happiness. If you've got a question about this or want to tell a story, you can call 1-800-933-5372. You can email think at kera.org or find us on Twitter at KERAThink. Before we start taking calls, Congressman Murphy, a bill that you wrote called the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act is being voted on tonight. It's the result of an investigation of the country's mental health system that you conducted, in which you found that federal funding for mental health programs isn't directly helping the people who need it. How would your bill refocus the country's mental health care system?
Well, this, as it's coming up on the fourth anniversary of the terrible tragedy at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, so it's taken us 4 years to do this, but this does a lot of revision of our nation's mental health system. We found that although our nation's federal level spends about $130 billion a year in this area of mental health, most of that's for disability payments, and that there's 112 federal agencies that share the rest of this money, and they don't work together. It's disjointed. It's not even a patchwork quilt because that assumes things are sewn together. There's 26 homeless programs in America. And so as we see the outcome of, well, such things as deaths from heart disease, lung disease, infectious disease, HIV, AIDS, auto accidents, cancer have all declined in the last 20 years. They've gone up for suicide. They've gone up for drug overdose deaths. And the problems continue. We mostly have, when we've closed all these state hospitals, we simply have taken people, we filled our prisons and homeless shelters and sadly, our cemeteries. So our bill restructures the federal government. It starts off by having a new office of the Assistant Secretary of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. That man or woman would then be responsible for helping to organize these federal agencies by putting accountability into grant programs and funding programs, because we found a lot of things were being funded for happiness and wellness and very little, if anything, for serious mental illness. So while money was going to things for workshops on getting in touch with your inner animal, making collages, making masks, interpretive dancing, how to make a fruit smoothie, it wasn't going to deal with schizophrenia or a bipolar illness or schizoaffective disorder. And recognizing that out of the 10 million Americans with serious mental illness, about 4 million don't get help, and that half the counties in America don't have a psychologist, psychiatrist, or social worker. So our bill also puts about $50 million into more training programs for mental health professionals. It works on training policemen of how to handle the crisis situation rather than let it accelerate into a violent breakdown. It does more for mental health first aid for the public to help them understand these situations. It does more for people who have trauma in their lives, for response after initial schizophrenic episode, because the early signs of schizophrenia begin to emerge by age 14 or so. There's a wide range of issues in here. We realize the system has to really transform. From one thinking that mental illness is your own fault or it just means that you had a tough life, to one where we recognize there are medical aspects to this, there are emotional aspects to this, there's therapeutic aspects, and get the nation moving forward, because we have just dumped people and become too comfortable just letting people be locked up in jail, letting harm come to them, letting them be homeless, and leaving families in a lurch out there when they're crying out for help and being told there's nothing you can do about it.
Why is it so often challenging for people who have not experienced a bout of mental illness to recognize that it's not the fault of the person who is suffering, that it's not a matter of them simply getting a new attitude?
Right. And, you know, one can get a new attitude for some things. I mean, 60 million Americans have some level of diagnosable mental illness in a given year. And some of those, it really means saying, hey, you know what, suffering is mandatory, but misery is optional, and I've got to get these things together and see life in a new way. And in many areas, that's possible. But when you're talking about serious mental illness, in the last couple of years, we've identified 108 genetic markers for schizophrenia. We still need to know more of what sets it off, and we know that early medication use and early therapy can help immensely in changing the trajectory of the prognosis. But the idea of just saying, hey, you know, suck it up, or that person's crazy, just ignore them, leave them alone, those areas have to stop. Similar to years ago, when people used to feel that same sort of stigma towards cancer, we wouldn't want to go near someone with certain diseases because we didn't want to catch it or we didn't want to talk about it. But it's tough for us to acknowledge it, and maybe in part because many of us realize it could happen to anyone, that to have stress so overwhelming in your life or problems so insidious in your life that you might risk a breakdown as well. And when the services aren't out there and you're pretty much left on your own, or it's just going to be the police taking you away, well, who can blame anybody for being fearful of that?
All right, let's resume the conversation about passive aggressiveness with my guest, U.S. Congressman Tim Murphy, who's a psychologist from Pittsburgh. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. I want to talk about passive aggressiveness in the workplace. On the one hand, there's good reason to keep certain frustrations from exploding at the office. But if we care about what we're working on, we are bound to encounter disagreements with colleagues. What does it take to build a healthy office culture free of passive aggressive attacks?
Well, rule number one is don't do it yourself.
Right.
Because ye shall reap what you sow here. And if you're seen as a person who is not going to be straightforward, honest, you're going to gossip, you're going to go behind people's backs and criticize them, you're not going to give it your best, you're going to delay projects, they're going to see you as a source of their annoyance. So you've got to be mindful in how you approach the day, especially if it's a difficult process and people are tired and they're reaching deadlines and there's a lot of stress in the workplace. Be mindful of yourself and your own behavior. Second, when you see things occurring in other people that may be negative, be careful how you respond to them negatively. If they start doing anger or passive-aggressive things with you, you don't have to swing back right away. Understand that everybody's entitled to a bad day or bad moment. They may be under stress, too. Maybe they didn't stop and think before the day started. Things like that are best taken care of one-on-one with someone. You don't have to be their friend. You don't have to go out drink with them or all those other things. But at least say, hey, we got to find a better way of resolving this. This is tense, and it's not going to help us here. Let's find a way of making this work and stay focused on the project and the product, not the personality involved. If it continues to erupt and grow into problems, you have to set yourself saying, okay, I've got to reward these behaviors, ignore these behaviors, and confront these behaviors. But if it still continues to build, that's time you may want to bring in another coworker or talk it over with the supervisor and say, look, Mary or John or whoever it is, it's a good person to work with. I want to make sure this works. Can you help us out? Can you help resolve some of these things? Because the tension's building. And sometimes you may find your supervisor or boss or someone else in the workplace knows some things you don't know. Like, as it turns out, you know, Mary's daughter is very sick right now, and that's adding to her conflict. John's wife just lost her job. Who knows what that might be in the context of all these things. But work those steps.
What if the passive-aggressive person is the boss or some other authority figure?
Well, you got a problem there.
Yeah.
And that is a matter of sometimes you have to protect yourself in the long run by documenting some of those conflicts. If it is the person who runs the whole company, well, maybe you're going to be in the process of building a resume to move on. But it's sometimes it can be highly respected if you sit down and say, hey, can I have some one-on-one time with you? I want to talk about something. And lay that out. Says, look, I'm committed to this job. I want to do my best. I want to see this company succeed, whether it's a small business or a large business. I want to see it succeed. But I want to make sure we're doing things better. And the way things are going is not working out well. I think we would do better if. And lay out the positive steps here. What does not work is the airing of grievances.
Right.
You know, I think that holiday is coming up, right, Festivus? Just to attack is not going to help anybody there. But you have to take out their own personal agenda and their toxicity in that, too, and try and lay it out step by step. What are some of the ways you see as resolution in this?
Are there good ways to maybe placate is the wrong word, but someone who has been passive aggressive with us, are there good ways to encourage them that we actually do care about what's bothering them? We would just like to do it in a more positive way.
Sure. I mean, and that's a few. I mean, that's the workplace. We're not automatons. We're not robots. And especially if you know that something's on their mind, sorry to hear that happen to you. I hope things are better. And the little things can mean a lot. Now, I know sometimes people worry, yeah, but what if it goes on? What if I offer to get one cup of coffee one day and the next day they're mad because I didn't give them the cup of coffee? Hmm. Or I gave them a ride to work because I know their car's broken down and now it's been 4 months and I'm giving them a ride every day. Let's not worry about setting limits yet. But at the onset, at times as a society, we've got so used to being distant from people, being close to someone almost seems foreign. I mean, let's face it. Our friends, our someone we may be dating, our spouses, our relatives, we text them most of the time now.
Yeah.
We don't talk even with voices. We don't get to hear those subtle nuances of voices. We don't get to see eye contact anymore, unless maybe doing a FaceTime. But sitting face-to-face, talking with someone over a long period of time where they put their cell phone in the pocket and don't even open it up, we don't do that anymore. We have to, as a society, almost relearn that. And among coworkers, it can mean a lot. Especially many workplaces now are designed in an office place where people are supposed to be sitting together, talking, collaborating. And some of that may be a little foreign to us, especially in the home front. So you got to rehearse those things, too.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. Actually, we just lost our caller, so we will move on to
a
different...
that could be a passive-aggressive move.
It could be. They've decided that they wanted to let us think that they were calling. I'm just going to assume it was a bad cell phone connection.
Okay.
Back just for a minute here to a little bit of politics. What do you suggest to folks who might still be smarting from election season battle of the yard signs with neighbors, right? People that we were always good friends with, and then they realize that they like the candidate that we didn't like and vice versa. And suddenly we have reason to think that that person's no longer our friend.
Yeah. It's time, I think, to move forward and say, hey, can we just find a way of working this out together? I mean, I'm used to it from the standpoint that someone who spends a couple million dollars against you attacks everything you've ever stood for in life. And then somehow election night, you got to talk to each other and say, okay, bygones be bygones. And maybe in the arena, it smarts, it hurts, but somehow you say the nation or the community has to move forward. Well, neighbors got a little more involved in this last cycle through. There was a lot more emotion involved in the commercials and the ads, the way people talked about it. People try and sway votes by emotions, not necessarily policy debates. We would have liked to have seen more of that. And somewhere along the line, I think to walk up to someone and say, hey, can we figure out a way to move forward. We're all in this country together. I think each side would respect it a great deal from the other one. It's not that hard, maybe initially, but now that the yard signs are gone, we're still in this country together. We got to find a way of making this work.
Is President-elect Trump just more honest maybe than other political leaders in sort of freely venting his frustration on social media? Is there a benefit to that, or is there also sometimes a benefit to leaving an irritation that we might feel unexpressed?
Both. There are sometimes that discretion being the better part of valor, as they say, or sometimes the silence is golden, if I can use a few cliches, is extremely valuable. They say, you know what? I'm going to let that slide. There's no sense of bringing it up, especially if someone's already hurting, churning it up again. On the other hand, people like the way he says it right away. We're used to politicians in our country, elected officials, being a little smoother, slowing it down, waiting a while before responding, not wanting to see someone hit right back. But there's a part of society that says, no, we want to see that. We want to see people moving forward. What I suggest, however, is however someone else does that, we don't have to do the same way. I myself was inundated with text messages throughout the day. Donate to this. Do that. Did you know this fact? Isn't this terrible? And I finally would just block these because I got so tired of being churned up all day and find myself irritated and annoyed at the tiniest conversation. It's like the guy, we use a story in the book, of the fellow who gets a flat tire. And he says, oh, I don't have a jack in the car. I can't replace this. He says, I remember a place down the road, a house down there with the light, but it's a 2-mile walk. It's raining. It's terrible. And the closer he gets to the house, the more miserable he gets. Until finally, soaked and frozen, he gets there and the door opens up. There's a little old woman there. And he says, I don't care if you have a jack or not. You can take it. And well, his anger has gotten the better of him in that situation as he's just churned his own mind up into frenzy. This is the battle that takes place with all anger. This is the battle that takes place with passive-aggressive behavior. And this is what we all have to watch, too, because we're all doing this in our social media, our Facebook postings, and what we like, don't like, the comments, the snarky things out there. You got to be able to turn it off. Whether or not you see leaders doing it, you got to practice it in yourself.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Congressman, the end of a family or romantic relationship is agonizing almost by definition, right? Can you talk about how passive-aggressive behavior can make breakups or divorce worse for all parties? I'm always astonished that there are some people who can break up and ultimately be at least cordial with one another, and there are other cases in which it seems to almost get worse after they've decided to split.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have someone who themselves has trouble with honest conversation and conflict resolution and communication, that had its roots even before the breakup, and that probably contributed to the breakup, where maybe one person felt disrespected, didn't feel that their words meant something, found themselves always sacrificing their goals for the other, and then once the breakup occurs, says, well, that is really occurring more. And if a person in that has contributed to the breakup relationship through their own anger, it's going to probably explode in spades as things go on. You'll see nastiness take place with hiring the worst possible mean lawyer, with going after everything the person's got, just seeing that their total destruction is the goal. And you got to be ready for that. Those things are hard to take, and that's where lawyers make a lot of money out of this. I think they're the only ones that really win in these kind of intense conflicts. But when you have someone who just doesn't want to communicate, only wants to communicate hostily, what's such a shame is the other one may really genuinely be saying, look, I don't want our child to suffer from this. Why are we putting this kid through the custody battle? Why do you have to buy a present every single day to buy their attention and alienate the other parent? It's really, really tough. And this is where, leading into this, if you had one partner that craved closeness and the other one wanted to be away from the other person all the time, be ready for this. The bitterness will leak out and continue on.
Is it ever hard for therapists who work with couples not to take sides?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we call countertransference. I mean, I did a lot of work when I did family therapy, where I would be working with couples, where they're trying to deal with a child custody battle or something else. And sometimes you'll just see someone who's just really totally negative, and they hate their spouse more than they like their child.
Hmm.
I would find myself at times just saying that very phrase to them, look, you're really harming things now. And the fact that you told your child it's okay to hate that parent, understand when you give your permission to a child to hate a parent, you're next.
Hmm.
And that negativity will build over time. And I think it's best when a therapist feels that, you got to say it. And you think it's getting in the way of the relationship, the therapeutic relationship. But sometimes you say, look, I just can't work with you anymore.
My guest is U.S. Congressman Tim Murphy. He's a psychologist who is from Pittsburgh and co-author of the new book, Overcoming Passive Aggression, How to Stop Hidden Anger from Spoiling Your Relationship's Career and Happiness. It's actually been recently updated from the original edition. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372, or you can find us on Twitter at KERAThink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. Fall registration is now open with courses in art, architecture, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Pittsburgh psychologist and U.S. Congressman Tim Murphy. His book, co-written with therapist Lorianne Oberlin, is called Overcoming Passive Aggression, How to Stop Hidden Anger from Spoiling Your Relationship's Career and Happiness. You can join us at 800-933-5372. We have Victor on the line in Waxahachie. Hi, Victor.
Yes, hello. I recently had a confrontation with a family member, and she's very passive-aggressive. And I tried to just speak directly to her, and she ended up becoming just more hostile. And now she's hurt, and she's avoiding me. And I'm not sure how to speak with her or approach her.
Can I ask a question here, Victor? Are you still there?
I am.
So when you said you spoke with her, what did you say?
She was picking up my children, and she went outside, put them in the car, and then she came back in, and she actually, I was kind of surprised that she was actually addressing the issue, and I asked her, are we really talking about this? And then she started to raise her voice, and I told her that she was choosing her behaviors at the moment. And she was choosing to make a big deal of an issue that over something mm-hmm. pretty trivial.
Well, and, along those lines, when things like that happen, I mean, the technique of how you handle it can be helpful, but sometimes it's also a matter of you basically called them out. And if someone is being passive-aggressive and avoiding their techniques, and you now say, hey, we're not going to avoid this, we're really going to talk about it, their initial reaction may be anger, direct anger, and trying to push you back. You would do well in a situation like that to remain calm, remain focused, say, look, I'm not going to get angry about this. I want to solve this problem, whatever that might be. Make sure you don't lapse into insults, even if they do. And you can even say, I don't want to have an insulting conversation. I want to resolve this. Notice that sometimes when a person starts their insults back, and if you say, all right, I'm not going to talk to you till you calm down, you may have given them what they wanted. Oh, boy, that person may say, I don't have to talk about this. It may sometimes be best if you say, I'll talk about this another time, but make sure you come back to it. But realize these things take time to resolve, and continuing to work at that. As a society, we don't like necessarily do that. We want things ready in microwave moments of discussions. And people are at different places with their lives. That's been part of the human condition for thousands and thousands of years. But if you stay focused and stay dedicated, whether it's for the sake of those children or this relative to say, I want to solve this. I don't want to have these things blow up in faces, that can be helpful. But also, there may be something else that is needling her or bothering her. You can say, is there some reason why your emotions are so strong in this? Is everything else okay? And sometimes you may find there's something else going on in their life they're willing to talk about, too.
I want to talk about silence because some people use silence as a form of passive aggression, of kind of shutting out the other person. Some people really just need a little time to cool down before they're ready to have a conversation. They're not necessarily being passive aggressive. So how can we tell the difference? And if we are one of those people who needs a little time before we have a rational conversation, how do we ask for it?
Well, you do the thing straight up. It says, I need to think about this first. I need to just calm down. I need to just focus on this and be alone for a minute. That being the case, someone will give you a pass, but make sure you come back to that later on. If someone else, if they're giving the silent treatment simply to ignore you or as a passive-aggressive mechanism, if you want to talk in this, I'm not going to give you that satisfaction. Be aware and rehearse in your own mind. You don't have to get upset about it. Sometimes having a third party, like if you have a counselor or someone else, work with you on that. If it's a family member or someone close with you, to have that other person help break that cycle of silence would be part of the ways of handling that.
We have a tweet from Carissa who wants to know how to call out a loved one on that person being passive aggressive without triggering their own defensiveness.
Well, if you come out with the attacks, you're being passive aggressive, stop that. Right. That's probably not the best way to do
it. It's like saying you're in a bad mood, right? It's never going to help things.
That's right. Say to someone, don't think of an elephant. They just think of an elephant.
Yeah.
If you think they're being passive aggressive, best to not put a label on the person, sometimes not even a label on the situation, but take that single item for what it is. In that situation, whatever that might be, say, the way this was handled, I was not comfortable with. So you're taking responsibility for your own feelings. I wasn't comfortable with that. If there's something you don't like what I did, could you please tell me directly? I'll be okay with that as long as you don't make it personal. So you give them, you take responsibility. Second, you give them a positive out, a model for communication, and follow up and ask them if they understand, if they're okay with that. It's never good, I think, to have someone be berated or say, I'm going to demand an apology for how you behaved. And then once they got it, then you maintain their anger too. If an apology is forthcoming, fine. Right away say, I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. Let's solve this and move together in the future. So those are some elements that can work in a situation like that.
I'm curious about what this suggests about the way we need to raise kids, right? Because there are many different ways to think about it. But in some families, the idea is mom and dad are the experts and what they say goes. And this is maybe a more old-fashioned way of thinking of things, but lots of people still do it this way. Children are not to talk back. Is that are we accidentally making passive-aggressive future adults when we say, once I've said something, you won't say another word?
Well, I might say Lorianne Oberlin and I wrote another book, too, called The Angry Child. And in that book, we go into that a great deal. Look, there is times when it's important that children learn that they can't always have their way. And just because they feel something, they go ahead and blurt it out. It's an important part of raising a child to understand that sometimes they They can't be impulsive with their words, with their emotions, the same way they can't be impulsive just because they see something in the toy store. They demand they get it now. Or if they don't like the way the ref made a call in their soccer game, they can't storm off the field. So that is an important part of self-control that we are obligated to teach children so we don't end up with a spoiled generation.
Sure.
But that being the case, it is important, however, to also nurture the child to be able to talk about feelings. At the time, whether it's young kids reading the story at night, talking about the characters in the story, respecting if a child says they're frustrated or upset about things, get to the emotions behind the anger. Listen to them. You don't have to respond to the meanness of them. And your parent can even say, look, hitting your brother is not a good excuse. Smashing your sister's toy is not an excuse. We're not going to handle it that way. It's okay to be angry. It's never okay to be mean. And we're going to talk this through and teach the child in those wonderful years of childhood how to handle conflict in a more positive and direct and non-threatening way.
Have you had the experience of working with patients that really didn't realize they were passive-aggressive, maybe didn't even realize they were angry until you spent, you know, a number of hours with them sort of working through this?
Oh, absolutely. That's a big part of therapy and counseling, or whatever the level is, that people don't realize the role that they play. They may be thinking the rest of the world is nasty. Look, sometimes people come into the therapist's office almost saying, can you please change the rest of the world because I'm okay and the rest of the world is not behaving. Go out and do these things. Or in marriage counseling, you see that all the time in couples counseling where someone says, I'm great, I'm just here for you to tell my partner here of how bad they are. That absolutely does happen. And it's taking the time in counseling to build that up. I mean, Lorianne does that a lot in her practice when she does it with couples. I don't work as much with couples now, but I may see that even in a recovering soldier who has been through hell and back in battle and doesn't realize the role they play in making their marriage a mess, and the spouse, the non-soldier spouse, realizing that they're simmering a lot of anger too because this is not the person that they married. Mm-hmm. Coming back with maybe their emotions gone or missing an arm, or as one spouse of a soldier once told me, she says, this is not the man I married. He came back with the same name, but I don't know who this man is. And those are things you have to deal with directly through counseling and get through the confusions and the emotional turmoil rather than let it perk up as anger.
Do you think, Congressman, that there's anything we can do prophylactically before people go off to war and, you know, get into situations that might well change any one of us if we had to face them?
Absolutely. And the military is becoming much more aware of this now. For the longest time, when soldiers went to battle, the famous stories about General Patton smacking a soldier, calling him a coward, or you saw those kind of things in the past, we understand that the traumas of war can break anyone. And about 15 to 20% of those who have been in the conflict of a battle may have a reaction of a traumatic stress disorder. It is normal to feel combat stress. You want someone to do that. It's normal to have post-traumatic stress, whether it's been an auto accident or a personal assault or combat. But we have some choices in going down the road of disorder. And so what the military does now is building more resilience, helping people, whether it's through physical fitness, understanding the importance of sleep. I mean, some people have written about that sleep deprivation is behind a lot of post-traumatic stress disorder. Hmm. How you eat, the personal attitudes you rehearse in your mind of how you live life, taking time to recover, learning deep breathing, reprogramming your brain away from that traumatic automatic experience of replaying and rehearsing that negativity tape are big parts of teaching someone before they go into war so they have the tools there when they're out.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is U.S. Congressman Tim Murphy. We're talking about his recently revised book, Overcoming Passive Aggression. If you'd like to join us, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Pushpa is on the line in Dallas now. Hi, Pushpa.
Hi there, Chris Boyd. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I totally enjoy everything that you present on the show.
Thank you.
And I do have a question for Mr. Tim Murphy about passive aggressiveness. Does it start at childhood? Because the adults who are not in touch with the emotions, if you look back on their childhood, you will see a pattern where as a child they were not raised with the child's need of love and nurture, and to also be honest about their feelings and being in touch with their feelings. So they have been actually shunted off and shut off and said, you're not supposed to be feeling this.
What do you think, Congressman Murphy?
Well, there is, she brings up a great point. If you're raised in an environment where you don't talk about feelings and you remain cold and hardened to that, or you're even punished with certain feelings, kids learn to withhold those thoughts. They learn to not explore them. It is uncharted territory for them, and they can feel a lot more uncomfortable. That being said, there are people, you can overcome a lot of that. It takes a lot of work. Perhaps the worse it was, the more work it's going to take. But it's when people recognize that they have some choices in their life. As I said before, that suffering may be mandatory, but misery is an option. When you realize you have some options, you can work on it. It's possible. Now, there are still extreme cases where people have been so severely abused as a young child. We think, gosh, can they ever recover from that? Can they ever experience love and affection? And most importantly, can they ever experience trust again? I like to think optimistically that yes, they can, because I've heard some amazing, amazing stories of recovery from kids who struggled much of their lives and adults who have faced trauma who have recovered. And when we see anger and passive-aggressive behavior and those kind of things, I hope that people see that as a signal, as a sign that there's something amiss, and we can not stay caught up in what we call the self-reinforcing nature of anger, and realizing that it creates this false illusion of being powerful and in control, and you feel you have this barrier around you, it can help you. But understand, you don't have to be condemned to remain that way. So it's possible, but it takes work.
I'm going to paraphrase the last call coming in just so we don't run out of time. It was about the idea that parents might maybe unconsciously use passive aggression to punish their kids or express their frustration at their children. What's the effect of that?
Not good, and I hope the parents understand that. I mean, we shouldn't coddle our baby kids, and I'm not a fan of helicopter parents. But similarly, it's not good to just ignore and berate kids through silence that way. Look, if a kid's not doing something right, bring it up to them, talk about it. If they are doing good things, talk to them about that. If the kid's frustrated and having tantrums, you can deal with that depending upon their age, do it in an age-appropriate way. But the idea that parents would ignore kids and deny them an avenue for communication, well, it doesn't make sense, because after all, that's what the parenting years are about. These are teachable moments that happen every day. So we raise kids who are compassionate and concerning and confident and independent thinkers and always in lifelong learners. And all those things get hurt if we teach a child instead that you don't have value, and we're going to ignore your attempts to communicate.
You could have written books on thousands of subjects in the mental health field. I gather, is anger a particular problem that you see in this society today?
I think a lot of it stemmed from, I think, my practice years ago before I got into government work, that I just heard so many complaints from family members and the conflicts that occurred, the same thing. And I think the same for my co-author, Lorianne Oberlin. That anger is such a powerful emotion. It drives people into conflict and drives them into the therapist's office, as does loneliness and depression, too. Mm. And it leads to a lot of negative action. So from our first book, The Angry Child, or this one, Overcoming Passive Aggression, we see it as a way of trying to help people out there, the millions of people who face this every day. And quite frankly, I want to see people resolve conflict, not stay immersed in it.
U.S. Congressman Tim Murphy is a psychologist, from Pittsburgh. His book is called Overcoming Passive Aggression, How to Stop Hidden Anger from Spoiling Your Relationships, Career, and Happiness. Congressman Murphy, it's been a really interesting hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much, Chris. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Alan Roberts. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.